Okay, welcome everyone to another Tuesday afternoon on Shake and Wake Radio. I am Stephen Robertson. This is Cancel the Cabal. And I'm also on PSN Radio, APGN Radio, and SoFlow Radio. So if you are able to help Annie out, hit that donate button. I know she would deeply appreciate it. Haven't had anything wrong with my voice up until last few seconds there. Start getting that choky, scratchy thing going on there. I am going to continue on reading Sexual Sabotage, How One Mad Scientist Unleashed a Plague of Corruption and Contagion on America and Others Before Him on the World. The Zionist. Of the middle of the 18th century. I think I'll go back about a half a paragraph to go over last week to remind myself and everybody else. Indeed, biology, cross-culture history, literature, animal, and probability studies, empirical observation, and common sense all confirm that homosexuality commonly results from learned behavior, from nurture, not nature. As two medical researchers reported in the Journal of the American Medical Association in 1998, abused adolescents, particularly those victimized by males, were up to 7 times more likely to self-identify as gay or bisexual than peers who had not been abused. The fifth column, a controlled mass media. Kinsey conceded sexual identity as commonly as a product of what he euphemistically called early learned behavior. If such learned behavior is commonly early sexual abuse, parental neglect, etc., this negates Kinsey's normality agenda and the effort to legitimize homosexuality. The homosexual lobby, led by two brilliant strategists, Kirk and Madsen, would need to create an alternative normal reality that would slowly become part of the public's understanding of normality. It makes no difference that the ads are lies. Not to us, because we're using them to ethically good effect. In the early stages of the campaign, the public should not be shocked and repelled by premature exposure to homosexual behavior itself. Instead, the imagery of sex per se should be downplayed, and the issue of gay rights reduced as far as possible to an abstract social question. Homosexual marketers, Kirk and Madsen, in After the Ball. According to Britannica.com, the fifth column is a secret group of subversives who work to undermine the nation's solidarity by any means at their disposal. Further, they say, a cardinal technique of the fifth column is the affirmation of sympathizers into the entire fabric of the nation under attack, and particularly into positions of policy decision and national defense. From such key posts, fifth column activists exploit the fears of the people by spreading rumors and misinformation, as well as by employing the more standard techniques of espionage and sabotage. In the last 50 years, Americans went from priding themselves on their honest religious lives to sex, drugs, rock and roll. Rockefeller, Ford, and other major philanthropies knowingly hid Kinsey's frauds and crimes and continued to fund the Kinsey Institute and other Kinsey-based university departments that award human sexuality degrees. By now, hundreds of thousands of Kinsey-cloned sexual saboteurs have redefined right and wrong, good and evil, normal and abnormal, for billions of Americans. Well, I think it must have been millions because we don't have a billion people here in America. For millions of Americans and the public policies that govern them. Our Constitution grants the American press with free speech privileges, so it will provide a window to the world. The Greek philosopher Plato said the truth needed to be known so that the policy could keep society straight. The free press was not to be a tool of special interest. Elite bankers, owners, unions, religions, or cults. Were the press serving unelected power lobbies, the fourth estate, the media, would be a fifth column. A group of people who, although residing in the country, act traitorously out of secret sympathy with the enemy. In 1978, Alexander Solzhenitsyn outraged his Harvard audience when he said, "The press can both stimulate public opinion and miseducate it. The press has become the greatest power within the Western countries, more powerful than the legislature, the executive, and the judiciary. One would then like to ask, by what law has it been elected and to whom is it responsible?" The mass media controls our information, our window to the world. It shapes the public mind, behavior, laws, and policies. We can judge who is in control of the press by studying the health and welfare of our people. Pre-Kinsey, mass media commonly reflected on sexual morality of the greatest generation. Looking at the hard data on violence, rape, child abuse, venereal disease, divorce, and more, we find the sexual health and welfare of our citizenry was relatively excellent. Post-Kinsey, despite astounding advancements in science and medicine, we have epidemic rates of rape, violence, child abuse, divorce, sexually transmitted disease, illegitimacy, and more. Even before Kinsey's mail volume appeared, the media blitz splattered Kinsey's false data across the country. 60 years later, media saboteurs continue to bombard us with false information that produces disease and social breakdown. How has the media defrauded us? Philip Kotler's famous book, Marketing Management, documents how the controlled media can stimulate public opinion and miseducate it. Kotler demonstrates how 2.5% of social leaders, carried forth on the shoulders of the mass media, can rapidly sway roughly 13% of the public into adopting a new innovation, belief, or product supported by the mass media. This influential group sways another 34%. The process continues until the majority of people are on board. Based on this model of the diffusion of new ideas, nations often radically change their belief systems. Kinsey's fraudulent claim about homosexual normality in 1948 and 1953 began to shift the public views on homosexuality. Following Rogers' models, popularized by Kotler, gullible and or predatory professors in major universities were quick to report Kinsey's findings on their naive students. This 2.5% or so of leaders, fueled by the heretic Kinsey in newspapers and television, began the climb up the bell curve. Even Kinsey could not cook up enough sodomy data to convince the public of its commonality. Through the media, using advertising and organizational psychology, caused an adaptation of innovation. that led to our current sodomy crusade. The allegation that over 50% of teenagers aged 15 and 19 had oral sex is an excellent example of Kotler's adaptation of innovation curve. This is a point of major social transition, says James Wagoner, president of the Advocates for Youth, especially as girls are often the hunters and the boys the prey. However, the resulting pain, trauma, sickness, and heartbreak among the youth who have lost their hold on intimacy does not follow a curve. Such harm is exponential, a diagonal line slanting straight up. Pedophilia and pederasty, the truth. Refuting blatant facts, sexologists argued that there isn't more child sexual abuse. We are just more aware of the crime. While they do accept statistics that show more divorce, robbery, murder, and venereal disease, statistics that show stunningly, they maintain that similar statisticians are just wrong about rape and child abuse. But it is the sexologists who are wrong. Yes, let us hope that we are more aware and that more children are able to report their abuse. But we must also face the fact that sex crime, like sex, is more prevalent today than at any other time in American history. In 1950, 2 years after Kinsey's mail volume, the FBI's craggy director, J. Edgar Hoover, announced a terrifying increase in sex crimes. Imagine that. Hoover advocated tough laws against sex offenders to help law enforcement wage war on the sex criminal, who Hoover viewed as a sinister threat to American childhood and womanhood. Kinsey detested Hoover. Wardell Pomeroy bragged that Kinsey ridiculed what the nation and the FBI were calling heinous crimes against children. And Kinsey publicly sneered at two Hoover-approved pamphlets warning parents about child molesters. But secretly, Kinsey was terrified. What if Hoover discovered that he had hired men to seduce, rape, and abuse children? Would Hoover charge Kinsey himself? Kinsey and his team could have gone to prison and even faced capital punishment. Certainly, if people learned that Kinsey and his clan had refused, as they did, to help Hoover's FBI find a child sex murderer, and if they doubted Kinsey's data and assertions about the insignificance of sex crimes, the legal momentum to weaken sex laws would stall, even fail. So to hide the truth, all the truths, they had to protect their image and insulate themselves from Hoover's scrutiny. Thus, the Kinsey cult of pedophile protectors traveled far and wide to popularize their propaganda that they were objective, conservative, scientists, and that children did, in fact, sexually seduce adults. In fact, years later, I interviewed a prosecutor who confessed he and his colleagues were forced to be trained by John Money and the FBI headquarters. But we know that the Kinsey Institute protected child sex predators, and even Gebhard said a pedophile we had interviewed who was being sought for a sex murder. Nice guys. In 1981, the National Study of the Incident and Severity of Child Sex Abuse and Neglect reported a massive increase in child sex abuse as reported to a child protective services agent, police, social services, and other treatment facilities. In 1976, the first year for which data from all 50 states were available, 416,033 reports were documented. By 1979, the number had jumped to 711,142, an apparent increase of 71% over a three-year period. 20 years later, we saw irrefutable evidence of sexual abuse on boys, as 7,166 boys were infected, actually killed by AIDS-infected men. The inexcusable cover-up of boys killed by men with AIDS jumped out from a radical 1995 Advocates for Youth report. The agency announced an increase in child molestation by adolescents, though the article also ducked the obvious fact that sexually abused children often turn their abuse on other boys and girls. The Advocate story also said the CDC in 1991 identified 537 girls with AIDS. Again, the girls were likely infected by homosexual boyfriends. Where are the arrests? The media outcry. The congressional investigations? ? Remember, the ancient Greeks celebrated pederasty, male sexual desire for boys more than pedophilia, opposite sex, child lust. Traumatized, confused, and despairing, most child sex abuse victims believe the lies adult pederasts tell them about their sexual identity. Labeling boys consenting gays places responsibility for their deaths on the children. Citing the rates of young gay deaths, then, the gay lobby justified government funding increases, which in turn enabled them to indoctrinate more children via pro-homosexual school sex education about AIDS, diversity, bullying, and hate crimes. Sexual sabotage can be fatal. Though information from local child protective services agencies and hotly contested and largely discredited subsequent statistics validated the increasing numbers of child sexual abuse charges. Indeed, some child abuse reports jumped 348% in 1996 over 1976. The American Health Association estimated that Americans reported 669,000 abused children to CPS agencies in 1976. Fast forward to data from the National Child Abuse and Neglected Data System, say that in 1996, more than 3 million abused children were reported. During this time, the child population increase was minuscule. Moreover, CPS agencies were unable to keep up with the volume of calls and simply did not investigate all of them. Rather, a different story than the FBI is telling about better reporting. Remember, data from the DOJ show that the non-family members abducted 58,200 children in 1999. Though these children returned home within 24 hours, roughly half had suffered sexual molestation. As Orwell said, despite what we see with our own eyes, the experts tell us that gutting laws that favored the family and restricting divorce brought us greater peace, civility, and well-being. The truth is that these charges and the privilege of the pornography and sexology dramatically increased criminal violence rates. The numbers game. America, the government asserted, was no better and no worse than ever before. What choice did we have but to accept this status quo? As the experts insisted that the nightly news of heinous cases of sexual crimes against children were just isolated incidents, sensationalized and blown out of proportion. We questioned our own powers of observation. We tried to convince ourselves that such cases really were quite rare. Even if it even if we did hear about them happening all the time, all over the country, please God, let it be my imagination. It wasn't. Hang on a second here. Government agencies skillfully and systematically covered up the terrifying ongoing increase in sex crimes against children for decades. Though we continue to believe our venereal justice agencies, venereal justice agencies, they did not warn us that something was and is very, very wrong. How and why have they hidden this truth? Why and how have they hidden this truth? This information increases this information they released and continue to release does not include sexual crimes against younger children and therefore does not reflect true rates of even more predatory crimes against children. Shortly after Kinsey published his female volume, the FBI began covering up child sexual abuse. In 1957 and 58, the FBI dropped child victims under age 12, the age group most susceptible to sexual violence, from rape reports, guided by an enormous group of outside experts. The FBI excluded all data on incest, sodomized boys, rapes of girls, and plea bargain cases of child statutory rape, purging data of such crimes against children under age 12 against its uniform crime reports. Though the Uniform Crime Reports, UCR, includes reports from the FBI, Health and Human Services, and the DOJ's Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention. Academic researchers and government oversight agencies did not include statutory rape, child sexual abuse, or incest assaults on children under age 12 in the UCR sex crime data from 1958 to the present day. In July of 2000, the FBI's National Incident-Based Reporting System, NIBRS, acknowledged this decades-long flaw in national sexual abuse data collecting, saying that the only national data collection effort that explored the incidence of sexual assault ignored crimes against young victims. The NIBRS reported the shocking first ever nationwide statistic on child rape, including forcible rape and victims under 12 years old. Sexual abuse victims were under 18, 34% were under 12, 14% were under 5. So in the post-Kinsey sexual revolution, almost 70 out of 100 sex crime victims were minors. And a third of all child sexual abuse victims were under age 12. Gang rapes and racially tainted rapes were all hidden away in a complex statistical analysis. Explosive NIBRS data in FBI forcible rape forcible rape statistic shatter the rosy illusion that our highly eroticized society is a nice, safe, and free society. Even Frontlines report the adjustment difficulties on boys and girls in the United States documents the effort of our newest cultural contagion while refusing to identify its critical cause. In 2001, 4,126 boys between 5 and 24 committed suicide. 433,108 boys were victims of child abuse or neglect in 2001. Juvenile girl delinquency increased 182% in 9 years, from 1987 to 1996. More than 2.7 million children were victims of criminal attacks in schools in 1997. Every day, between 1.3 and 2.8 million runaway and homeless youth live on our streets, roughly half of whom enter prostitution. Since 1999, foster care has held 550,000 children, often abused. Okay, I think it's a good place to take a break here. You get something to drink and walk around for a minute. I guess about a 5 minute, 15 second break. Be right back, everyone, in just a few minutes.
Since my childhood days, many of my friends have gone away. Some I never more in this life will see, 'cause time has made a change in me. Time has made a change in the old home place. Time has made a change in a smiling face, and I know my friends can plainly see. Time has made a change in me. In my childhood days, I was well and strong. My home in that land. somewhere with my friends who wait to meet me over there.
Okay, gotta find my mouse. It hides. It likes to hide. Credibility of FBI statistics. In October 2000, the FBI's UCR claimed a 9-year decrease in violent crime. In January 2001, the Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention declared that sexual abuse of children had nosedived 31% from 1992 to 1998. In 2000, well, of course, if you just stop reporting on it, it'll go down. That's how it works, folks. In 2003, the DOJ asserted that there is progress in the area of child sexual abuse and that things were getting better, and recall that. In 2006, the Washington Post quoted an FBI report that since 1979, rapes had plummeted by 85%. Yeah, you stop reporting on it and it goes down. However, reading the small print, we find no evidence of decline. Just research to cover up the shameful, visible truth. Even the Washington Post FBI report appears to have slipped a decimal. The official United States crime rate, 1960 to 2005, finds that 34.7% forcible rapes per 100,000. In 1979, dropping to 31.7% in 2005. An alleged 8.6% decrease, a far cry from 85%. And even the alleged 8.6% decrease is reprehensible statistical gamesmanship, negated by a 231% forcible rape increase, 1960 to 2005. One of Kinsey's academic disciples is David Finkelhor, PhD, the primary child abuse researcher at the DOJ's Crimes Against Children Research Center, CACRC, and also of the Kinsey Institute Child Sexuality Group Study Group. Finkelhor has chosen not to reveal or criticize Kinsey's sex crimes against children. Finkelhor's office is funded by the DOJ's Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention Office in an effort to solve our child abuse problems. In 2003, Finkelhor's team reported that crimes against children declined. To make that stick, his team ignored data that would compromise the good news. These highly sophisticated researchers have simply bypassed child sex abuse among roughly 58,200 children abducted annually by non-family members, at least half sexually molested. More than 350,000 prostituted children, runaways, and throwaways. All sex abuse victims under age 12. Roughly 16,000 estimated statutory rape victims over age 7. 500,000 foster children. This doubled from 1995 to 2000. According to the 2005 DOJ report, statutory rape by K. Troopleisure and H. Snyder, the incident of statutory rape is relatively unknown at the national level. According to this report, the FBI's UCR maintains national data on forcible rape and other sex offenses, but does not isolate statutory rape crimes in its annual Crime in the United States report. The report further elucidates the Office of the Justice Program's Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention Bulletin defines statutory rape as non-forcible sexual intercourse with or between people who are younger than the age of consent. Of course, the word non-forcible in that context is an oxymoron. Furthermore, according to the DOJ report, the Juvenile Justice Bulletin excluded victims under age 7. While sexual victimization soars, government reports hide these facts and suppress critical real world data. As with other crime statistics, including rape, some of the numbers game happens at a local level within police departments. One heroic whistleblower in Denver Police is Denver Police Lieutenant James D. Ponzi, a professor at Regis University and author of the 2005 CompStat Revealed. CompStat, or Comp Scam, Ponzi wrote that a lawsuit regarding a rape and murder revealed the practice of downgrading sexual crime, using the Comp Stat and then Comp Scam systems, police departments cook the books to lower crime rates. This system of lowering crime rates is supported by Lieutenant David Grossman, PhD. The Crime Stat program made cops accountable for bringing down crime. When the New York City Police Department union went over the data, the crime rates doubled in New York City if the proper classifications were applied. Except for murder statistics, which new emergency medical technology reduces, the pressure on the cop on the beat means police artificially bring crime down, and the root causes of the crime gets off scot-free. Because we cook the books, for example. Officer Ponzi says some high-crime public schools define assaults as scuffles, and they do not report scuffles. In an email to me, Officer Ponzi wrote that after his CompStat article, he got emails from different departments all over the country confirming statistics being altered in their cities. You are right on target in your article about the rape of children being downgraded and not counted if the victim is under age 12. The crime category that you want to lower is put in another category that is not counted by the national incident-based reporting systems, or is not in the public eye at the moment. Ponzi opined that Tennessee law professor Glenn Reynolds, Ph.D., use statistics that don't reflect what is truly happening in sex-related crimes. According to Officer Ponzi, while police try to do their jobs,
Some feel-good administrators handcuffed them,
refusing to back the cops on controversial issues. Although New Orleans fired 5 officers in 2003 for downgrading violent crime stats, in 2004 the Policemen's Benevolent Association in New York City revealed that officers there were cooking the books, classifying felonies as misdemeanors and rapes as inconclusive incidents. 2 lower crime statistics. In 2005, the Los Angeles Police Department reported a 28% drop in violent crime after they reclassified domestic assaults in which victims were not injured, or at least not seriously injured. Officer Ponzi reported that Atlanta crime reports omitted 22,000 crimes. In New York, when the police union applied proper classifications, precinct crime rates doubled, since sometimes a suspect would admit to dozens of crimes but only be charged with one. The list goes on. We are indebted to real men like Lieutenant Ponzi, Lieutenant Grossman, Detective Vernon Gebberth, their colleagues, and thousands of unsung police on the beat who are still on the job trying to protect women, children, and our nation. Recidivism, fraud, and truth. Politicians who felt public resentment over the failed Kinsey and Justice system sought political cover behind parole, rehabilitation, and sex offender registries. But upon release, parolees frequently report that and accelerate their crimes. Unfortunately, offenders, especially pedophiles, can never be safely or ethically released. Still, all Western nations, except Kinsey and the ALI-MPC recommendations for leniency and parole. And all of these nations felt the vile effects. Canada was typical of that Western fall. Even more liberal and liberated than the United States, Canada therapeutically treats brutal sex predators and then quickly releases them. During the 13 years from 1959 to 1972, the rate of Canadian prisoners serving most of their sentence plummeted. The roots of this leniency to convicted predators, of course, date back to Kinsey and his cohorts. His colleague, Manfred Guttenmacher, for example, of the group for the advancement of psychiatry, which advocated a therapeutic solution for criminal conduct, absent any proven success of such therapy. Today, many of our elitist judiciary ignore public safety, continue to elevate the futile and failed solution of therapy for sex offenders. I'm going to take a little 10-second break and get a drink. Based on sexpert testimony, courts and parole boards have increasingly recommended treatment and thus released convicted sex offenders, giving them pills, strapping them with ankle bracelets, or otherwise monitoring their activities. But consider the 1988 case of Jim and Anna Stevenson, whose 11-year-old son, Christopher, was grabbed at a shopping mall, sexually assaulted, and brutally murdered by a convicted child sex offender who had been released on supervision, according to the California State Senator Dennis Hollingsworth, though. A team of police officers tried monitoring offenders who had been released into the public. For 20 days, the police kept close watch on 12 high-risk sex offenders to see if they stayed away from children, playgrounds, and schools as promised. The police were shocked what they found. One man used his girlfriend to lure a child to a hotel. Two others were volunteering at a church-run daycare. Seven of the 12 offenders were rearrested on a number of charges. Naive sex therapists naturally want to believe in the efficacy of what they believe to be their curative powers, and they are easily conned by predators. Along with malevolent therapists, these credentialed sexperts argued that such offenders would never rape again, but millions of victims attest to the fact that paroled sex predators commonly rape again. The dead, too, could speak if the DOJ released the number of paroled offenders who committed murder. The fact is that just as pornography must provide increasingly shameful or violent images to produce the same thrill, so is it that the sexual violence high on violence offenders resist treatment and insist and instead increase their brutality. Professors Seth LaFond and John Winnick were surprised to note that once released, violent offenders relocated to other states and were hard to trace. Still, these elitist law professors viewed prison as unfair to rapists. Since the legal view in vogue was that sex predators had low recidivism rates, and after serving some jail time, they fulfilled their duty to society, their debt to society. But the truth about sex offenders, recidivism is chilling. In 1997, DOJ research shows that sex offenders were about 4 times more likely than non-sex offenders to be arrested for another sex crime after their discharge from prison. In 1991, an estimated 24% of rapists and 19% of men convicted of sexual assault were on probation or paroled when rearrested for another sex crime. 40% of the released sex offenders who allegedly committed another sex crime were caught on a new offense within a year or less of release. About 8 in 10 inmates serving time in state prison for intimate partner violence had injured or killed their victim. Of 272,111 prisoners released from the U.S. prisons in 15 states in 1994, 67.5 were rearrested for a felony or serious misdemeanor within 3 years. 46.9% were reconvicted. 25.4% were resentenced to prison. These data support a government accounting office report that examined 500 sex offender therapy programs over 50 years. The 1996 government accounting office report found none of the 500 sex offender therapy programs produced any evidence of success in curing sex offenders, with pedophiles especially incurable. That's what we've been hearing for years and years and years. Validating the 1996 Government Accounting Office report, a 2004 report on 724 Canadian sex offenders looked at 403 prisoners who received treatment in prison and 321 who did not. After 12 years, the rate of sex crime recidivism of each group
was nearly identical. 21.1% who received treatment were caught for another sex crime. 21.8% who were not treated were caught for another sex crime. 0.7% difference. Then why does the September 6, 2006 DOJ report on criminal offender statistics claim only a 3.3% rearrest rate within 3 years among 4,300 released child molesters? First, most child molestation data are unreported. Still, if we accept these sanitized data, released predators violating roughly 129 more children in 3 years. 43 sacrificial lambs a year to freed criminals. But much is hidden here. These data are only including offenders who were captured within 3 years for yet another sex crime. And there is no way to tell who will reoffend. So paroling sex offenders, treatment or not, are more dangerous than Russian roulette. The fact is, post-Kinsey states parole even 3 times convicted rapists and murderers. And even the 2007 Kids Act allows parole of child sex predators. This is a state guarantee that more children will be raped and killed by the parolees. Is one child's life worth that of a single paroled offender? Question mark. Today, just in California, lawmakers and judges have paroled more than 100,000 convicted registered sex criminals. These predators allegedly most live in California neighborhoods. Through tens of thousands of them, though tens of thousands of them, are missing. This is atypical of the rest of the nation. California's Senator Dennis Hollingsworth reported that 33,000 of the 76,000 sexually violent offenders required to register under Megan's Law in California are missing from the system. These predators could be anywhere. Notably, the Associated Press, not the DOJ, reported that this to the American public. The Klaas Kids Foundation, named for 12-year-old Polly Klaas, one of the thousands of abducted, violated, and murdered children in the last decade, created the Megan's Law. Color-coded map, which is available on the internet at www.klaaskids.org. Maybe I'll type that in at the break. It's kind of long. This interactive map reports each state's law under the Sex Offender and Community Notification Act. Statutes such as Megan's Law supposedly track violent child abusers who reintegrate into society after vicious sexual attacks. But why should this be acceptable? Only permanent incarceration guarantees public protection of sex offenders. No, putting them to death will guarantee that too. The only known and validated solution to repeated crime is to remove molesters, rapists, mutilators, and murderers from the pornographic environment that breeds them. The only guarantee that a child sexual predator will never harm another child is by life in prison. Humane treatment within prison walls should be a lifetime effort. One strike and you're in. Instead, the state frees sex offenders by the millions. Okay, I think I'll take another break here. And, let's see. I don't know. I guess about
I guess about 6 minutes here. Maybe a little more than 6 minutes. So we'll be right back, everyone.
Sing it, Joe. We'll try. You got it.
I love to tell the story of unseen things above, of Jesus and His glory, of Jesus and His love.
Well, Annie, I just seen what I put wrong in there. I got two S's in class kids instead of two A's. So let me see about changing that. Come on. Okay. And, of course, I got to take away the question mark, too. See if that changes anything. It's thinking about it. I don't know. It's just spinning and spinning. Nope. It still says page not found. Oh, there it is. It just came up. So I got a different... this one should work. Come on. Oh, well. Get back to my reading. If I could find out where I was. Oh. One strike and you're in. Instead, the state frees sex offenders by the millions. Sadism in Kinsey's image. I think that second website should work. According to the Tacoma News. Yeah. They probably don't want a lot of that being given out, but it finally came up for me. According to the Tacoma News Tribune, 7-year-old Ryan Hayde was riding his bike when a paroled sex offender and murderer abducted, raped, stabbed, and mutilated the boy, leaving him for dead. Ryan's attacker had done time for savagely molesting 7 children. Authorities paroled him because he successfully completed therapy. Then he murdered a 15-year-old girl. He was convicted and imprisoned for several years until the authorities felt he was really sorry for the child's murder. Yeah. Though the killer announced he planned to build a death van equipped with shackles and a cage for capturing, sexually torturing, and mutilating children, the prison authorities cited psychological evaluations and paroled him anyway. Loosed upon society, he moved in next door to an elementary school. Local police often questioned him about various sex assaults upon children. So after brutalizing 7 children and murdering at least 1 girl, this man was legally free when he attacked 7-year-old Ryan. Kinsey trained sexperts, psychologists, and courts ensured this psychopath's repeated release. Child rapes, mutilations, and murders. The brutal attacks on Ryan finally forced the establishment of the Washington State Task Force on Sexual Predators, which called for life imprisonment without parole for any violent sexual act against a child. Despite state and media propaganda, American has never before been a culture of such sexual violence. What's more, from the greatest generation to the hate, America, me generation, we have seen 6,371% increased in serious juvenile crime, and in roughly 30 years, the United States averaged over 200% more violent juvenile crime annually. Again, we find the origin of sexual violence echoes Kinsey's sexual psychopathology. In 1973, Pomeroy told Playboy magazine that he found sadism is often loving. No one normal considers sexual torture to be loving. Since 1973, countless millions of men and boys, even women and girls, have accepted sadomasochism as a sexual high, buying steel-cuffed silk four posture bed ties, and even sadomasochistic whips and clothing on the internet and at local stores like Spencer's Gifts. Millions now obsessed by internet pornography have become excited rapists who violate women and children in groups and gangs, and singly they violate those who are weaker than they. Victims' cries bring out more arousal, more violence, and even death. In August 23, 1994, Advocate self-report finds at minimum 55% of upscale gay respondents assault themselves with an insertive instrument, a dildo. 45% abuse the phallus with a clamping instrument, a ring. Let's just put it that way. 20% admit that sadism they define as bondage and discipline, commonly being or making others one's slave. 19% inflict pain on the nipples and with metal clamps, and 10% practice sadism they call sadomasochism. That 100% of Advocate responders combine that these violent acts is highly probable. After Kinsey had his way with our culture, deviants began openly promoting sexual cruelty. Internet sites and mass media retailers like Spencer's Gifts in upscale malls feature designer torture materials for what is euphemistically called bondage and discipline. The kind of debasing and humiliating paraphernalia and behavior display at Abu Ghraib in 2009 on Iraqi prisoners. The pornographic dehumanizing Abu Ghraib assaults are precisely the kinds of acts sexologists commonly recommended as sex play to jazz up disabled or merely disappointing sex lives. Of course, unlike Abu Ghraib, in bondage play, the domestic torturers allegedly cease their brutality at the sublest signal from their victims. My interviews with such victims confirms that the fantasy game too often disintegrates into torture. As analysis of Everett Rogers, PhD's marketing diffusion of innovation, law predicts that as important leaders accept a new idea or product, eventually much of society adopts this idea or product. Accordingly, society increasingly adapts retail sexual aberrations, including Kinsey's homosexual deviances. Yeah, well, thanks. I don't know. You guys can go through that link there and tell me what you find. Consider the results of the 1994 survey by the premier homosexual magazine, The Advocate. The self-reports of 2,500 Advocate readers logically minimize their involvement in sadistic behavior, but still the results are shocking. Like other homosexual publications, The Advocate acknowledges staggering levels of inter-homosexual violence. At least 75% of these readers confess they enjoy violent sex. 55% used painful objects on one another, and 20% admit to sadistic bondage and discipline. These revelations precede the modern flood of television dramas that depict handcuffed sex as excited, as well as fallout in real-time sexual violence. The extreme sadosexual pedophile homicide. If males welcome sexual violence to one another, this creates a logical trail to
violence against their intimates, including children. Consider the general rate of child homicide. In the U.S., one of the leading causes of death for juveniles is homicide. It is the fourth leading cause of death for children ages 1 to 4. Third for ages 5 to 14. And second for ages 15 to 24. While heterosexual males figure large in the abuse of girls, homosexual predators figure large in the abuse of boys. Men and older boys often initiate younger boys into the affluent lifestyle of homosexual pornography and prostitution. Victims include runaways, boy prostitutes, boys who advertise in the homosexual press, boys picked up for homosexual bars, as well as kidnapped boys. Robin Lloyd provides a litany of police blotter cases of boy sex murderers. Commonplace is the gay world. A world in the Washington Times said that the 1980s saw numerous homosexual kidnap, rape, castrations of boys. However, the mass media typically hides such disturbing news from the public. That said, in 1984, shortly before the onslaught of gay power, the New York Times did publish such a report. Officials cite a rise in killers who roam U.S. for victims. This in-depth article profiled the killers of women and girls and also noted the high percentage of homosexual boy killers. Many of the most violent recent multiple murders have been committed by homosexual males. In fact, the homosexual boy assault and murder is often very brutal, including torture and maiming. Mutilation and castration are common features. Vernon J. Gebberth, MS, MPS, former commander, Bronx Homicide, New York PD's homosexual serial murder investigation, summarizes gay sexual murders. Homosexual-related homicides involved acts of sexual perversion and serial killings. The most frequent motivation, he wrote, was sadomasochism, sexual acts followed by male pedophilia, lust murders, and robbery accounted for the balance. 12 pedophile homosexual serial killers were suspected in the deaths of 126 young males and boys. The National Center for Prosecution of Child Abuse reported 1,490 American children died at the hands of their caretakers in 2004. The official definition of caretakers is so broad that it might include a single mother's boyfriend or a babysitter. No state agency lists the thousands of sexually violated children murder victims, but untold thousands of toddlers and children have been raped, sodomized, mutilated, and murdered in the last decade. We know that this is not normal American behavior. The unspeakable deaths of thousands of children are the direct resulting of aborting Judeo-Christian judicial policies and mental health training by sexual saboteurs in Kinsey's wake. What does the following tell us? 19 state bills, acts in 13 years, commonly named for a rape, murdered child. 2007, the Federal Kids Act of 2007 estimates the registry of sex offenders, mail addresses, generic victims. 2006, the Federal Jessica Lunsford and Sarah Lund Act, sexual predator monitoring program. 2006, the Federal Jeremy Bell Act of 2006 penalizes the interstate transfer of child sex offenders. 2006, the Federal Adam Walsh Child Protection and Safety Act includes acts punishing offenders.
2005, Wisconsin's Ames Law releases information on juvenile sex offenders who may reoffend. 2005, the Federal Christie and Fernoff Act limits habeas corpus for a killing of a person under age 18. 2005, the Federal Jetsetas Bill strengthens the Prevention and Deterrence of Crimes Against Children Act. 2005, Florida's Jessica Lunsford Act imposes 25 years to life for some first-time child sex offenders. 2004, Florida's pending Charlie's Law for Charlie Brucia considers parole revocation if felons violated children under 16. 2003, the Federal Protects Acts of 2003 for Elizabeth Smart toughens punishment and enacts Amber Alerts. Elizabeth Smart. That was a very, very high-profile case. I don't remember what state that was in. 2003, California's pending Danielle's Law for Danielle Van Dam. Anyone who kills a child in the home eligible for death penalty. 2002, the Federal Amber Alert for Amber Hagerman requires media business personnel and police to speedily locate abductees. 2002, Levy's call for Levy Frady requires action when an abduction is confirmed. 1996, the Federal Megan's Law for Megan Kanka amends the Wetterling Act and requires a community notification system. Oh, Utah, okay. The federal Pam Lynchner Sexual Offender Act requires lifetime registration for certain recidivists. In 1995, the Florida Jimmy Rice Act reviews inmates for probability of reoffense. 1995, the Arkansas Megan Nick Alert is a cooperative effort of 250 radio stations in case of abduction. 1994, Federal Jacob Wetterling Crimes Against Children and Sexually Violent Offenders Act provides stronger penalties. In the past, the media has given national coverage to a number of sex crimes perpetrated by strangers against children, including those against Jetsetta Cage of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, 2005, Jessica Lunsford, 2005, Sarah Lund, 2005, Charlie Brescia, 2004, all of Florida, Elizabeth Smart of Utah, 2002, and Samantha Runyon of California, 2002. In addition, the two notable sexual assaults by repeat sex offenders against young adult women, Drew Sordin in North Dakota, 2003, and Alexandria Nicole Zapp in Massachusetts, 2002, were widely reported. Both federal and state governments have enacted laws with provision that allegedly increase penalties for crimes against children, require sex offenders released from prison to register, and require law enforcement to monitor them. The only sure protection from offenders remains permanent incarceration and capital punishment. There, she finally said it. But I think they could save just bucket loads of money just from capital punishment and not incarceration. That's just my opinion.
I'm going to take a quick break here because we're starting a new chapter, chapter 14. So take a little 10-second break, get something to drink. I caught a video last week of a woman that was interviewing Robert F. Kennedy Jr. on his Anthony Fauci book last year. The one that took me 6 months to read, 2 hours a day. It took 26 weeks. She said, well, it was true because I said to everyone to hear that he used virtually every single millimeter of every page. Otherwise, it would have been about 1,000 pages, she said. I think she exaggerated a little bit. It probably, I know it at least would have been about 850 pages. But I thought that was quite funny. Because I remember mentioning that several times. Yes, the book with all the snob words in it. Exactly. What were some of the snob words? I'm trying to remember some of them. I don't remember that. Chapter 14, The Sex Industrial Complex. Commercial opportunities for sex-enhanced drugs have exploded, and sex researchers are eagerly sought for help in commercial ventures. Our dance cards are no longer empty. Sexologist Leonore Tiefer Salvo, an interview with Dr. Judith Reisman by Bobby Maddox, spring 2007. In the course of producing my documentary, Kinsey's Pedophiles, it became clear that every substantive allegation Reisman made was not only true, but thoroughly sourced with documentary evidence, despite the Kinsey Institute's reluctance to open its files. Tim Tate, Yorkshire Television, UK producer. Kinsey Pedophiles, 1998. Nice, two nice quotes for the opening of chapter 14 there. All true. Make no mistake, Alfred C. Kinsey was the most effective and deviant sexual philosopher in human history. He was the first acclaimed American scientist to insist that virginity is unhealthy. Promiscuity helps marriages. I'm going to finish this little thing off, and then I have a thought. Promiscuity helps marriages. Pornography is constructive. Obsessive masturbation and bestiality are never problematic. Bi-homosexual sex acts are normal. And children are sexual from birth. And appropriate sex partners for adults, on and on, for 60 years. You know, I said early on in the book that she blames his black propaganda for black propaganda on a whole generation, the greatest generation, and the people from the people born in the teens and the 20s and 30s and 40s. And then she blamed the black propaganda for making the baby boomers into this, what this is. But, you know, I still say it wasn't his black propaganda that did this. These people, for the lack of a better word, they wanted to do this. That's still my opinion. Nobody makes anyone do anything unless they're at gunpoint or something like that. Being forced to do something physically. They weren't forced physically to do this, any of this. They wanted it. And the legislators wanted it too. Otherwise, they wouldn't have passed these laws. We wouldn't have had
all of this stuff in our society. It has not always been smooth sailing. In 1964, the erotica bibliographer for the Kinsey Institute, now the Kinsey Institute for Sex and for Research in Sex, Gender and Reproduction, Gershon Legman, wrote in the Horn Book, 1964, that Kinsey's studies were statistical hokum. Is that a East Coast snob word there, Mark? H-O-K-U-M, statistical hokum. I've never seen that one. Sounds like a snob word. With data designed to disguise Kinsey's propagandistic purpose of respectabilizing homosexuality and certain sexual perversions. Legman was correct. Sexologists called him disgruntled. Yeah, it does to me too. In 1976, Stanford University historian Paul Robinson observed in The Modernization of Sex that Kinsey's statistics were designed to undermine the traditional sexual order, and that paying heed to Kinsey would gut all sex laws, including age of consent. I'm a little bit late for the break here. I guess I will take a short break. I don't know. About 3.5 minutes, everyone, so be right back.
Today I went back to the place where I used to go. Today I saw that same old crowd I knew before. When they asked me what had happened, I tried to tell them.
Thanks to Calvary. my God, we don't live here anymore.
Okay. I forgot to mention in the beginning of this hour here that that all the stations are listener supported, so please help Andy out if you're able to. I forgot to mark my spot. I gotta find it. To sexualize an infant before his or her ability to walk or talk, never mind before their development, maturity, and reproductive readiness, is criminal. A cruel torment that interferes grotesquely with children's natural development, subsequence, and produces unnatural behavioral, psychological, and psychobiological and psychological deviance, not to be outdone in the legal disposition. June Reinisch, as Kinsey director, claimed children were masturbating in the womb. Oh, that's a good one. Bruce D. Perry, M.D., of the Child Trauma Academy, said sexually abused children easily became hypersexualized. Promiscuity is reported in 38% of victims. Ignoring myriad other responses from depression to self-mutilation to suicide, Kinsey and his followers cited children's subsequent promiscuity as proof of the pleasure they got from their violation. Such twisted interpretations support the pedophile agenda, which argues that premature sexualization and even sexual trauma are good for children. The Kinsey Institute, SIECUS, Planned Parenthood, and others serve pedophiles well. Okay, that's good, Annie. Yes, they are sick. Only a bullet to the head. Sorry, my opinion again. The Kinsey crimes should have a grand jury and congressional mass media investigation to overshadow Watergate. Oh, I do want to find out. I have forgotten to tell everybody, but I have told everybody that I was abused as a boy by a cousin, and I found out after she had died a lot of drug use in her life from an early age, but she was abused as a little girl herself, so that goes right along with this book, Indications. The Kinsey crimes should have a grand jury and congressional mass media investigation to overshadow Watergate. After all, allowing the Kinsey crimes to go unpunished has brutalized and dehumanized every Western nation. Within the last 10 years, though, we have seen a small chink in the armor as sex addiction spiraled out of control. Christian sex addiction therapists have begun to challenge the premises of modern sexology. Predictably, therapists today face a growing victim population. Sex addiction therapists see pornography addicted patients who offer myriad fallouts, divorce, impotence, homosexual ideation, sex crimes, and more.
Well, thank you, Sarah and Mom. Some of the Christian therapists understand that the origin of these problems is in Kinsey. Beyond biblical counsel and support, some of these groups teach students and survivors about sexology's Kinseyan foundation and how it has lied, entrapped and debauched them and the entire Western world. Knowledge is power. Unfortunately, most sex addiction therapists today, co-opted by the Kinsey mentality, continue to recommend the benefits of sexual fantasy, for example, as though this were healthy and harmless, which it is surely not. Sexologists know that they must protect Kinsey and his data, despite the fact that his twisted data remain hidden by the Kinsey Institute. His disciples cling to their prescriptions as gospel. And though Kinsey's sadomasochistic psychopathology, criminal sex experiments on children, and eugenicist ideology are well documented, his followers ignore or discredit the hard evidence. They try, they must, for Kinsey's biography is a battleground, said sadosexual advocate, lesbian anthropologist Carol Vance, Ph.D. If Kinsey is discredited, 50 years of sexual progress is undone. That depends on your idea of progress, Miss Vance. The sex industry complex. As sexologist Tiefer gleefully notes, the massive sexual dysfunctions dominating our culture mean that our dance cards are no longer empty. Big money flows from big sexual despair. The chart, scientific authority of the sex industry complex, describes how the Kinsey Institute sabotaged the greatest generation and paved the road to today's national sexual pathology. This chart is a roadmap from the Kinsey reports to today's society, even to kindergartens, governed by what I call the sex industry complex, with the acronym SIC. It is sick. Sex industry complex, SIC. To understand the relationship between Kinsey, modern sexology, and the SIC, we need only follow the gold. The Kinsey Institute receives millions of dollars in state and federal funds, plus investments from big pharma and big pornography. Today, our lives and culture are under the influence of big sexology, a multi-million dollar industry. Consider the resume of the Kinsey Institute's current director, Judy Hyman, Ph.D., paid by the U.S. Natural Institute of Health and the Sinclair Institute, an internet pornography trafficker. The Sinclair Institute sells pornographic media, sexual torture equipment, and anal fun kits for all. Thus Hyman peddles and panders pornography and anal sodomy, which is directly linked to spreading AIDS. In her previous position at the University of Washington, Hyman headed a series of studies to find a female Viagra pill. While exposing female volunteers to pornography, Hyman called these studies clinical and reproductive. Though they were clearly sex experiments to profit the pharmaceutical industry. Reporter Cynthia Gourney of the Washington Post wrote that the goal, the anticipated source of these struggling sums of money, is a woman's equivalent of Viagra. Scientists and capitalists dream of finding a drug that could boost female sexuality.
One Hyman aide said selecting pornography films was the worst 2 weeks of my life. A coerced Hyman dismissed. A coarsened Hyman dismissed the visible distress of her aides and subjects. You sell things off insecurity, she said. Multiplying and marketing women's insecurity is money in the bank. Indeed, Big Pharma has invested billions of dollars in encouraging women's sexual abnormality. Lonely people create the market for Big Pharma and big pornography, selling chemical and media love products. Thus, Hyman's hands were in the pockets of big pornography and other SIC funders. Then Hyman moved on to control research at a bigger pond at the Kinsey Institute, where she took Indiana University's prestige to the bank. Such well-placed sexologists have long-lasting profit-sharing arrangements with the SIC. Pandemic promiscuity creates profitable pornography addictions and a subsequent mass market for pharmaceutical impotence aids and vaccines to retard and treat sexually transmitted diseases. Big sexology benefits big porn, which benefits big pharma, which benefits big sexology. It would be a perfect system if it weren't so fatally flawed. Where is the sex industry complex taking us? Relentless vagina syndrome. Oh, I'm sorry. Restless vagina syndrome. Big Pharmacy's newest be like a porn star disease. In November 3, 2009, Terry Allen, senior editor of In These Times, wrote, "The pharmaceutical industry wants you to think that if you don't have sex like a porn star, you're in need of their drugs. You, like 43% of other women, have female sexual dysfunction, FSD, and they want to help." I didn't suspect this was going to be a comedic book, but she just says so many funny things. Or I don't think she's saying them to be funny. The Journal of the American Medical Association article said you need help if you lack of porno libido. Gives you personal distress. So convincing women to feel distress is a key component to the drug company strategy to market a multi-billion-dollar pill that will cure billions of women of what may not ail them. By pushing the idea that normal women have explosive sex all the time, Big Pharma helped launch the disease. Absent orgy pills, she can try the Orgasmatron, a spinal implant that risks infection and paralysis. Or at $60 a month, one can buy horny goat weed extract to feel like a real woman. The shaved bear pudenda and the vaginal surgery to be tighter is increasingly accepted, even by educated and intelligent women. Allen says companies and clinics that push pornography standards concoct illnesses and then develop drugs to treat them, and vice versa. Either way, the syndrome makes a profit. Dr. Jennifer Berman now heads a Beverly Hills FSD clinic and appears on Oprah. She was also on a panel sponsored by Big Pharma and helped define female sexual dysfunction. 22 drug companies, including Pfizer, had paid off 18 of the 19 authors of that panel's report, the BMJ revealed. Yep, there is big money in the collaboration of big pharma, big pornography, and big sexology. Kinsey Institute, the epicenter. Millions of normal males and females can no longer achieve orgasm without taking a pill or viewing pornography or fantasizing about it, profiting from and masking the grotesque increase in young, healthy men with pornographically induced impotence. Big Pharma is marketing new libido drugs and perfumes. The research that uses pornography to test sexual response arguably will addict some subjects to these erotoxins. That's just fine with the sex industry, so sexologists have used and prescribed pornography for decades. Not coincidentally, big business abortion funders, Rockefeller and pornographers Playboy and Rockefeller, initially financed the sexology field. Sexologists, in turn, produced, sold, and contributed their own academic pornography and advice to Playboy, Penthouse Forum, Playgirl, Hustler, etc., and served as expert witnesses in all major pornography trials. No conflict of interest there. Today, big sexology receives millions of dollars to search for the magic drug, smell, or image that will kickstart a sexual climax, with or without a partner. Soon, they will no doubt mass market a full-service arousal and climax pill, a medical advance for men. Sexology is working on the challenge of doing the same for women. Just as the media have taught women that they need hair color, facelifts, and breast implants, sexologists are teaching them that they need heightened lust or an entirely new concept. Until now, women's identity has been dependent upon her sexual virility. A new pathology. American women trying to please pornographically imprinted men are now paying for dangerous surgeries to heighten and re-sculpt their genitalia to resemble pornographic models. Big pornography and big pharmacology paid big sexology to create and legitimize such needs by increasingly eroticizing females. In turn, a female libido pill will mean meteoric profits for the sex industrial complex. But they need women to believe that they need a hot libido. Working together, the sex industrial complex both creates and fulfills that need. On the other side of the equation, the SIC largely victimizes men. Kinsey Institute associate scientist Eric Jansen explained in the Frontline that regular pornography, which male subjects had found exciting, no longer stimulate them to arousal to the same arousal state. The researchers had to increase the men's dose of sadistic pornography, Jansen said. These highly sexually active men did not respond to porn clips that had proven successful in eliciting sexual responses in earlier studies. It was not until we provided them with a wide variety of porn clips to choose from, depicting anything from group sex to sadomasochism, that we started to obtain clear signs of arousal. Thanks to Kinsey, the industry continues to normalize its gateway drug,
pornography, and legitimized pharmaceutical arousal and climax. In the end, the bizarre Woody Allen's virtual sex orgasmatron, made famous in his 1973 film Sleeper, would not be coming, will not be become science fiction. Will not be comical science fiction. It is becoming our reality, and it isn't funny. It seems eerie that Alfred Kinsey and his saboteurs launched his Brave New World in 1948, the year of Orwell's 1984. Now it is full of gear and fully financed by Eli Lilly, Pfizer, Ford, Rockefeller, and pornography industry, and state-supported research, schools, and libraries. Thus, the SIC is entrenched in our society. I find it quite interesting that Orwell's book, 1984, people didn't have sex anymore. They didn't have sexual relations. I think that was all taken care of by artificial means, if I'm not recalling correctly. So that's kind of weird. I'm sure neither read each other's book until they... I'm sure they both got a big laugh out of each other's book if they read them. Correct. No, it wasn't allowed in 1984. Well, I saw both movies and I read the book too. Big Pharma pleased that sexology is no longer a stepchild of the health field. Even sexologist Lenore Tiefer, worried about industry giants with the resources and determination to create multi-billion-dollar blockbuster sex drugs. Tiefer said that it puts public safety at risk when sex researchers are commonly unable to reveal the downside of the libido drugs that they help create. Especially worrisome, the use of these drugs is escalating. Whatever the benefits, the media skirt the drawbacks of impotence drugs, such as Viagra, largely ignoring disturbing data implicating Viagra in heart attacks, and the role of these drugs in sexual assaults by chemically aroused satyrs, old and young. One new study confirms what college kids have been saying. From 1998 to 2002, the use of Viagra in men under 45 tripled. Viagra is being used as a recreational drug, thus it belongs more in the category of pot, crack, heroin, or meth rather than being a medicinal pharmaceutical. The very fact that young males actually think they need this drug is all by itself alarming, as reporter Mike Adams. But it's even more alarming to realize that Pfizer appears to be doing very little to restrict the sales of Viagra for recreational use. Independent research confirms that pharmaceutical companies don't care how their drugs are sold or who uses them, even if there's no justified medical use whatsoever, to fatten up their own bank accounts. I think that's all for the day, folks. Mark my spot here. I'm not going to play a song, Annie. I'm just going to drop the streams. So, hope everybody shows up for tomorrow for... I guess I got to find my mouse. I hope everybody shows up for tomorrow for me and Roger. So until next time.